what has happened to the nonviolence of the first wave of the Arab Spring? Where are those protesters now?
I think that is really both a fascinating and a very sad issue. And let me just backtrack a little bit. I mean, I was looking a little bit at the history of the conflict between the Muslim Brotherhood and the Egyptian military.
Great.
And it seems as if, you know, they have been at this for a very long time. The Muslim Brotherhood was established in 1928. Modern Egypt begins with Nasser leading a coup against the monarchy in 1954. And one of the Muslim Brotherhood's most prominent ideologues, Sayyid Qutb, you know, whose writing also inspired Al-Qaeda, gets killed in prison in 1966 by the Nasser regime. And as we recall, the Muslim Brotherhood itself kills Anwar Sadat after Sadat visits Israel, and then Mubarak comes to power and proceeds his crushing of the Muslim Brotherhood. In other words, just looking very briefly at the kind of 60, you know, past years of Egypt as a kind of modern state, there's been this sort of death dance between the Egyptian military and the Muslim Brotherhood going on and on and on. Now, the so-called Arab Spring, and it really derives its name, you know, from the uprising of this incredible movement in Egypt in the winter, you know, sort of fall winter of 2011. This was a very different movement, and the young people, the liberals, the leftists, the independent trade unions, media people, professional associations who organized this were really insistent on techniques of nonviolence. They led a movement of mass resistance, and I think we all remember these scenes from Tahrir Square, where the demonstrators would sort of bring brooms and clean the square afterwards, or they would establish sort of kitchens and provisional hospitals, etc. This was a very different kind of movement than either the logic of the Egyptian military. The military is like the military everywhere. It understands one language. And the Muslim Brotherhood that, you know, has been repressed, but is a very, you know, they're a very significant part of Egyptian society. So this is a puzzle to me as to what happened to this sort of moderate movement. You know, Mohammed el-Baradei is the most recognized name to us among some of the figures in this movement, but the computer person who started Twitter, Facebook, while Ghanem is someone else. Now, they could not translate themselves into party structures or representative structures quickly enough in order to be contenders in the elections, in the June 2012 elections. I think this is the tragedy of Egypt. Something new was about to emerge, and it was nipped in the bud.
Professor, let me just make sure I get this straight. You're telling us that the basic tension has always been between the secularists, to some degree, the Nassers and the people who came after him, and the Muslim Brotherhood, and that there was an election. The Muslims won, partially, I suspect, because of the disparateness of the opposition. In other words, the secularists were all divided up all over the place. Do you think if there was an election today, that would happen again, or the word would be out that we better band together, or the Muslim Brotherhood wins again?
Yeah, I think that another election, another speedy election, would not produce good results. And this is different than saying democracy in Egypt can wait. I mean, there was a very interesting editorial by a significant thinker, Charlie Kupchan, in the New York Times a few days ago. I'm not saying that. I think that what has happened is that the transitional institutions in deeply divided societies have not been set up. And what I mean by this is, you know, we now have experience in observing societies like South Africa, some of the transitions in Eastern Europe, Poland, Hungary, that in realizing that you can't simply take societies who have lived under authoritarianism, autocracy, hold elections, and then, you know, bingo, you know, expect a kind of fair proper transition. I mean, this is minimalist understanding of democracy, and it is doing a lot of damage because it's being propagated by, you know, a lot of people in the Middle East. I think in a society that is as divided as this one, and we have to accept it. I mean, I would not want to live in a society where the Muslim Brotherhood dominates, lives, you know, whatever, you know, and I'm glad that I don't have that choice. But they are a significant part of Egyptian society. What needs to be done, I think, they need to start establishing transitional institutions. And what I mean by this is the following. They rammed through a constitution on December 12th by a referendum, which is hardly representative. And I was reading some numbers on this. The referendum had only a 30% turnout and garnered 63% of the vote. And Juan Cole, who writes about this stuff from University of Michigan, says this is a referendum that had only one-fifth of the support, you know, of the population.
So let me just stop you and say, who rammed it through?
I think the Muslim Brotherhood rammed it through.
Right. And this got the secularists and the generals all ticked off.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the Muslim Brotherhood, there's no question about the fact that they made a lot of mistakes in order to establish a one-party rule. They tinkered with the structure of the representative assembly. They declared only the upper house, the Parliament of Egypt. Only seven members apparently were elected to this upper house, and they didn't establish a kind of constitutional transition team that would include all forces in society.